technology trained for like decades.
Did he have the legendary wrench that I've heard he has?
What's Dean got to do with it?
It's not really the dick, it's the balls. Cock talk with Locke. I knew I'd get it in, James.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a ding.
I'm coming in there with a two-finger cul-de-sac. I'm going to tickle them pink, and they're going to get a dose of Bonzi.
To me, relationships are like a leash. And
yours didn't go well, right?
No, no.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Let's start right out. Hey, what happened?
Hi there. Welcome to the show. My name is Dean. The 3 o'clock works good for me. It's weird, though. It's like one of those things that you know is coming, and you kind of got to get ready for it. And so my hands are a lot sweatier doing an afternoon show than an evening show or a morning show. But please welcome to the program, as always, my friend and co-host Lachlan Cross from 95.7 Cruise FM in Edmonton. Lach, I just want you to know I was having a little chat with your boss. About a GoFundMe account. Says you're not allowed to start it. Christian Hall is your boss. He said you're not allowed to start a GoFundMe account, and he directed it at me, and I sent back, you don't own me. I'll do what I want.
No, I know what he's talking about. We probably shouldn't.
Lock, you own. It. I said, I won't get into it. I said, Lock, you own. And then he goes, I don't own him. It's more of a lifelong lease you can't escape.
That is an excellent way.
Yeah. Nice to have a little chat with your boss on Twitter today. I'm going to check in and see how you're doing and maybe give you some pointers a little later on. But Locke, out of Edmonton, 95.7 Cruise FM, the number one morning show in Edmonton. It's a great rock station. Tremendous morning show.
Know if it's
of
number
yours.
One yet, but
it is. I'm saying it is, so I'll will it into existence.
All right.
Thanks, friend Steve. Of yours has agreed to join us today, and he has the pleasure of calling games, which include the greatest hockey player in the universe, Connor McDavid. Please welcome to the program, play-by-play guy for the Edmonton Oilers, Mr. Jack Michaels, ladies and gentlemen.
Jack Michaels!
Jack.
Thank you. Now, am I to surmise that there should be a third member of your show on who didn't bother to show up? I didn't have the requisite drawing power to bring him in, or what?
No, you're good.
Sure what happened? Yeah.
Yeah, he's just kind of
one off or what?
He might be. We don't know. We don't ask. Like when guys don't show up for shows, like we've got this show and there's four of us, right? It's myself, Darren Pfeiffer from the rock and roll band Goldfinger and the Dangerous Darren podcast, and then Locke joins us and James D. Fiore. He's a hell of a journalist, super super bright. He has blackballmedia.ca. And both of those guys are hit and miss. Locke and I are like we're like herpes in a port of call back in the 1700s. We're consistent. We're always here. Locke, those two, fuck. You know what? Sometimes they should. Like Darren showed up yesterday, Locke, for the podcast.
Interesting analogy, by the way.
Darren showed up for the podcast like a half an hour early, and we hadn't seen him in a month. I literally we were talking about it. Maybe he's dead. We don't know. But yeah, it's loosey goosey here, Jack. It's great to have you. How are you?
I'm fine. Well, I could tell it was loosey goosey when it did say 3 p.m. or thereabouts, because we're in the, I guess, netherabouts region. What are we, 314? So, no, it's good. I appreciate punctuality, and I also appreciate a lack of punctuality. So whatever works for you guys.
Well, we don't like start at 3 o'clock. We get on at 3, and then usually around 3, 4, between 3 and 4, we'll hit it hard. So
so there's an hour of buffer.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
All right. How do you two know each other?
Well, through Twitter.
We don't. The other thing I was going to say is you're stretching it a little bit when you say we're friends. I understand deceiving the audience is part of every good show. But to be honest, this is the first time we've laid eyes on each other, unless there was a chance meeting and, I simply wasn't important enough for him to remember.
No. I can explain my relationship
because Locke told me you guys were great friends. Like his tweet this morning.
I did
like,
not.
Yes, you did. You sent me a text and he's like,
well, I'm here.
That's my best friend. Josh, my best friend.
I'm this close away from just storming out.
I am a fan of Jack's call. And when he started in Edmonton, because, and you're not supposed to admit that you listen to other radio stations, but I would tune into the broadcast 630 Ched, and I was a fan, and I started following him on Twitter. And then this year, when he ended up doing the television broadcasts, I started tweeting and saying, oh man, I love what you do. Not that Kevin wasn't good at what he did, but I just think Jack brings a certain energy to the calls that is seriously lacking in sports today, especially in hockey. And I'm we're very lucky to have him as our Edmonton broadcaster. It's fantastic.
Not what he said at all. You know what he said? He said, Jack and I go way back. He's coming over this weekend for some a shrimp kebab. I believe that's what he said.
I haven't invited him yet, Dean. You're embarrassing me now.
So you did radio, obviously. You got a radio guy here in Locke. I used to do it. Don't like it anymore. But that was your history, right? Like you got your start in calling games, obviously, on the radio, Jack.
Yeah, I came out of college and figured I'd go straight on to ESPN or whatever, and quickly found out that making $4.25 an hour and working the graveyard shift was going to be my entrance into the media world. So I actually hosted a daytime talk show, for lack of a better word, a morning talk show, often conversing about subjects about which I had no clue, local politics and things of that nature.
Yep.
The future director of Homeland Security, at that time, Pennsylvania Governor Tom Ridge, was a frequent guest as the governor of Pennsylvania. And I'm 21 years old. Hung over most mornings and bluffing my way through conversations with the most powerful man in the state. So
right. That's
how I got my gig, and it set the stage for a lifetime of bluffing my way through life. And so far, so good, I guess.
That sums up radio.
My dad always said, when I was getting good grades in school, he always said, "You're not a good student, Jack. You're just a wise manipulator of men." And I took that as a compliment, and I hope I can live up to it for the next 40 years.
Yeah, I second that, what Locke just said, which is you're explaining how fraudulent your beginnings in radio were. I'm like, fucking guy was made for the business.
Beginnings?
Yeah, absolutely.
I am still full of shit, and
remember,
I'm 50.
The old sports broadcasters, like in college football, if they had the wrong guy running down the field, it was just a lateral. Lateral or Jones. They just invented stuff.
Well, it's good. Fuck. That's what radio is, right? Like, a lot of people, when they get into radio, they think it's just going to be a lot of fun. They're going to play music and have some laughs and stuff like that. But there actually has to be, some prep work involved. But I can't tell you how much shit I made up on the radio over the past 20 years of my life. I can't tell you.
Well, it goes on that people have no idea. When you're broadcasting a game and certain things are going on around you. Early in my career in hockey, I was up in Anchorage, and I ended up being the voice of the Alaska Aces for 8 years. But prior to that, I was working for a team in Colorado Springs. It's my first season as a pro. And all of a sudden, I realized, it's second period. The Aces fans are in uproar. Alaska's getting some tough calls against it. And I look over to my right, and the guy's name is Fred Rannard. And all of a sudden, they start chucking stuff on the ice. And all of a sudden, out of the corner of my eye, I see him take one of those. Remember the big gulps? Jim Carrey made it famous in Dumb and Dumber. It was like a 56-ounce Pepsi. He grabbed it and chucked it onto the ice. This is my fellow broadcast. And I was like, what if I was probably 20 games into my minor pro career. And I'm like, holy cow, like that's taking it seriously. So the next day, the commissioner of the league calls me and says, we've had some reports that, one of your colleagues may or may not have joined the crowd. And I just pleaded dumb. I also learned you don't rat on your friends, but it was wild times. And
that's why I know you're not in radio anymore, is because most radio people would have ratted that guy out in a fucking heartbeat.
In a heartbeat.
Yeah. Most radio people would have said, totally, it was him. It was that guy. I'll drive you to his house.
It was the midday guy.
If I had known better, I probably would have done that. Maybe it wouldn't have taken me almost 1,000 games to get to the NHL. But no, in all seriousness, you know, the great thing about working in radio and the great thing about working in those, you know, minor leagues is you meet the most interesting and creative people you'll ever meet. And all those, you know, experiences that are fun to look back and laugh on now. I mean, believe it or not, they make you a better broadcaster, better person. And, you know, when you're on a show like this, you've got stories for a lifetime.
Yeah. And you know what? You're obviously flexible, right? Like, just sitting here and talking to you and listening to you, hearing a little bit of your backstory. Like you thought you'd get out of college and go straight to ESPN. Everybody's like that. Everybody has, you know, dreams of ending up in certain markets.
Delusions of grandeur.
Yeah, we all do. And then life kind of takes course, right? Like, you know, just hearing parts of your stories, starting in Pennsylvania at 21, and then I heard something about Colorado in the pregame talk, and then finding out you were in Anchorage for 8 years. I mean, in your mid 40s, this wasn't, you've been at this for 25 years, right? Like, this is, and to get there now, I mean, how does one do that? Is it just attrition? Because sometimes you get lucky and some you don't. But everybody, if you love the game of hockey, wants to do play-by-play. People do it in their fucking pajamas from the couch when they're watching the game.
Well, if I had any talent, like I said, I would have made it a lot quicker than I did. But I grinded it out. I often thought, you know, if I'm just spinning my wheels at age 35, you know, maybe it's time to shut her down. And wouldn't you know it, you know, in the summer of 2010, you know, bang on, I get a call and all of a sudden I'm one of the few people that you or anyone knows that actually moved south to Edmonton, Alberta. And that's what I did from Anchorage, Alaska. But you know what? It is. It's mostly attrition. I mean, you know, there are so many talented people in this business who, you know, haven't got exactly the job they wanted. And I'm one of the lucky few to get it. And I used to, trust me, I mean, at all these league meetings and talking with guys who had made it, I'd hear that and I'd just roll my eyes like, yeah, easy for you to say, man. And I, you know, I'd be bitter. I mean, I went through some dark moments. Like, you know, you don't get job after job, you're banging on doors. This business is all about rejection. I mean, it makes my dating history look like, you know, elite, you know, and it was not, trust me. But the point is the ratio of rejections to accept. I mean, I always say, you know, I basically applied for and got two jobs in my life out of probably, I don't know, I've probably applied for, I've lost track. I mean, all the sports, minor league baseball, I've gotten two jobs out of whatever. And that was the one that sent me to Colorado. And that was the one that brought me here to Edmonton. The Anchorage one, they recruited me. And the hometown radio station obviously wasn't so much as me applying, but me begging and, you know, tucking my tail between my legs and crawling into my hometown radio station because I had a grossly inflated ego. Now, that's one thing that hasn't changed. I remain completely in love with myself. But, you know, again, I've gotten two jobs in my life, and I've probably applied for, I would say, 300, and that's conservative.
Wow. Wow. I always thought, Jack, and maybe you can clear this up for me, I always thought that play-by-play and that sort of job was a way to hide a drinking problem.
It's a way to develop a drinking problem. when you're broadcasting 1,000 games and nowhere closer to your career objective, trust me, it can drive a man to all kinds of weaknesses. But and that's, Dean used the perfect word. Sometimes it's just attrition. It's being in the right spot. And I will go back to 2010. My predecessor in this job is a Hall of Famer, a gentleman by the name of Rod Phillips, who's a better guy than he was a broadcaster, and he was a Hall of Fame broadcaster.
Great
but
guy.
I think I benefited from the fact that the Oilers had never hired a guy, ever. I mean, if you really, like, weed out the stories of how Rod became the play-by-play voice of the Edmonton Oilers, he basically put his hand up. you know, at that time, no one knew what the WHA was. No one knew what, you know, what Bill Hunter envisioned. No one knew what the Alberta Oilers was set to become in 6 or 7 years when Wayne Gretzky was acquired from Indianapolis. So they had never hired for this position. So as a result, they were willing to take a look at an American who was grinding it out in Anchorage, Alaska. And to be honest with you, I think the fact that I was working in Alaska had some cachet. Even you guys are like, Alaska? What the hell? You know, I mean, so
well, it's fucked. It's so far north.
It's an attention getter. It's a conversation starter. I tell my kids every day of their lives, trust me, you will thank me for being born in Alaska one day, because it is the ultimate conversation starter.
It's an interesting journey, and people's journeys are like, I love digging into how and what and why and some of the low points and the high points. Because if you apply for 300 jobs and you get two, right, it's going to be low points. You know, if you're in Alaska and you're calling games on top of, if I'm not mistaken, I think you were working for the team in an official capacity as well.
Yes, sir.
You had to wear a million hats just to stay working in the game that you loved so much. And then, because the goal, you hadn't reached the mountaintop. You hadn't done what you set out to do, right? How do you stay motivated if you've got people out there that are applying and applying and applying for jobs? And listen, these play-by-play jobs, there aren't going to be more of them, right?
No.
You know, unless there's an expansion team or whatever. But everybody that loves to do what you do, and everybody's an armchair play-by-play guy. We all are. But how do you tell all of the other cats trying to get to where you are, hang in there? Like, what is your advice to your average play-by-play guy that's out of school? Maybe he's got a few years in the business and he's discouraged.
Be honest.
Well, first of all, I tell him I was you. And I was you at so many different points of my life. I was you at age 23. I was you at age 28. I was you at age 33. And I was you without any kids, without any, you know, without a wife, without a girlfriend even. But, and then I was with, you know, girlfriend, wife, kid. Like, I went through all those steps and was very angry about my chosen line of work on numerous occasions. So first of all, I think you need to relate to people. You need to say, look, I get it. If I'm you looking at me 15 years ago, I'm like, get out of my face. Like, I don't blame them for feeling frustrated, because I felt all of that. Trust me.
Right.
The only thing I can say is, you said wear so many different hats. The key for me, and I can't thank the Anchorage community enough, was it was the only game in town, and they loved the Aces, and they supported the Aces. And most notably, from a completely selfish perspective, they corporate sponsored the Aces to the tune of a situation where I was making more than enough money not only to live, but to raise two kids and to keep my wife happy and to allow her to stay at home as they were born and brought into the world. And
the that's something sauce. That,
yeah, that, I mean, that's something that most guys working beneath the four major league sports, they don't have that luxury. I was very fortunate in that regard. Now, I worked my butt off. I mean, I was putting in 70-hour weeks, and I'm not patting myself on the back because I was getting paid for it, but it was a lot of work. I mean, there were a lot of times we'd be on the ocean somewhere in Hawaii, and I'd be on the cell phone with a sponsor saying, well, we'll get the dashboard artwork fixed for next season, you know, all that kind of stuff. I was in charge of a lot of things, and it was, again, good for me because I met the business community. I met the season ticket holder for whom, you know, the $1,200 for two season tickets to minor league hockey was a huge chunk of their budget. You know, you meet so many different people and you're able to realize that, you know, it's not all about you. You've got a lot of people that are not only depending on you to provide quality work for them, but you're also depending on to continue to support the team. You've got to be that liaison because you directly benefit, you know, not just, I mean, financially from their support. So there's a great deal of things that go into it. And that's what I tell a lot of the young broadcasters, step out of your comfort zone, do things that that you're not comfortable with and continue to work at it. Trust me, when I was 21 years old, I did not envision cold calling businesses and saying, would you be interested in purchasing a Dasher board at Sullivan Arena in Anchorage, Alaska for $5,000 a year? I at no point in my 4 years of achieving, you know, honor a degree with honors in upstate New York was I thinking, hey, I'm going to be 5,500 miles away at some point, you know, schlepping Dasher boards for some, you know, minor league team in Anchorage. But as soon as you get out of your head and you stop using terms like some minor league team and schlepping and all that stuff and take it seriously and find a way to produce the best within you for the benefit of that person, that's when you start becoming a real pro. And
that sounds,
as I say that out loud, it sounds a little like grandiose and egocentric,
philosophical.
But honestly, that's part of the process. Getting over yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I have a question about, because in this business, it's very competitive, and quite often it's difficult as a young broadcaster to find people to as mentors and to get, get advice from and bounce advice off of. Did you have any mentors when you were coming up?
I did. I was doing a minor league hockey game at the Civic Arena in Pittsburgh, the old Igloo, as you guys probably know it. And
Igloo, yeah.
Yeah. So the high school games, when you got to a certain stage of the playoffs, especially the Western Final. The Western Final is the one I remember. There's a Western PA Final and Eastern PA Final. Much like Edmonton, Calgary, Toronto, Ottawa, not a lot of love lost between those two sides of the state.
No.
And
none.
So they'd play the Eastern Final. This is for high school. They'd play the Eastern Final at the Spectrum, the old Spectrum in Philly, and the Western Final at the Igloo. And then they'd usually find some sort of neutral site for the championship game. But they always played the Western and the Eastern Final in the big rinks. And the way they usually did it is, let's call it a 2 o'clock local start, and then the Penguins or the Flyers would play at 7. So that was the big thing in the community. Hey, Western Finals at 2, and then the Penguins take on the Rangers at 7. And it was at one of these high school, you know, state semifinal, if you want to call it that. Wouldn't you know it, the game goes triple overtime, and I got Matt McConnell, who's now the voice of the Arizona Coyotes, and Mike Lang, who's still the Hall of Fame voice of the Pittsburgh Penguins, although he does mostly home games now. They're over my shoulder. They're just waiting for this, you know, high school announcer to get the heck out of the way. I finish up, and I'm very like, you know, you pack your own stuff up. Obviously, I'm not a big wheel at that point. I'm 22 years old. I'm packing up the Zircom and all that crap, and I'm putting my stuff away and getting out, you know, because I'm embarrassed that I've got these major league dudes waiting for me. And both of them, you know, kind of said, hey, relax, no rush, blah, blah, blah. And both of them pulled me aside and said, hey, what do you do for a living? Is this what you do? Or, you know, like, and I said, oh, I, of course, immediately went into default American mode. Oh, I do, you know, college football and basketball, you know, this is just a high school hockey game. And they both kind of corrected me and said, look, there's a million guys who can do college football and basketball and baseball. There's not many guys who can do hockey. You're pretty good. And they were, I mean, I kept looking for a wrinkling of the corners of their mouth, or they said, forget the other stuff. You should be applying to minor league hockey teams. I didn't even know there was like a lot of minor league hockey teams at that point in the United States. I had no idea. I hadn't investigated. I was focused on, you know, finding a way to be the voice of Duke basketball or something ridiculous like that, which I never would have gotten. And sure enough, I ended up starting to send tapes. And about 3 months after that conversation, I was on my way out to Colorado Springs for my first job in minor professional hockey.
Fucking crazy. And when you hear your story, sit and listen to the journey, it almost sounds insurmountable for the average broadcaster, right?
Yep.
Like if there's someone out there that says, listen, I want to be a play-by-play guy. I got the bug. I love sports. I want to call games. I love hockey, whatever the situation is.
I would say two things. Don't do it because you want to be famous, and don't do it because you want to make a lot of money.
Right. Same with radio. That's what I tell people in radio too. Don't do it for those reasons. But your aim is true. And I hear that in what you're talking about, right? I hear you talk about what has been important in your journey. And just to pull a kind of nugget out of your rant about 5-10 minutes ago, getting over yourself, you know, making what you're doing the most important thing that you're doing right now, not reading into it, not minimizing it, because you're minimizing yourself when you do that. But what is the best of you that you can give what you're at right now? And that's lost. It doesn't happen that much anymore. It's a philosophical art to be able to immerse yourself in what you're doing virtually, like to say, this is what I am all about, and I'm going to give it everything I have, and I'm not going to get down in the mouth about it. I'm not going to get crazy angry. I'm not going to get depressed. I'm not going to get sad. And if you do, you dust yourself off, and it's really tough for a lot of people. But that's an obstacle. Like, the obstacle to become a play-by-play guy now in this day and age, or to do your job, or to get into sports media, it's never been bigger. It's never been harder, right?
And never been more competitive, because there's never been more people who don't want to do it or don't think they have the knowledge to do it. And a lot of people, you know, and again, I'm not patting myself on the back, because I had shortcuts in mind too, but a lot of people want to go the shortcut route, and that's, you know, that's tough. I'll say this just to get to that point. The other guy who took time out of, I mean, I just couldn't believe that he got back to me. Then I couldn't believe he kept reviewing my tapes year after year, was Doc Emmerich. I mean, Doc Emmerich, you know,
the voice.
And I can't tell you how bad my tape must have been when I was 22 or 23. I mean, it must have been just atrocious. And here's a guy at the absolute pinnacle. I mean, as you guys know, he's been at the absolute pinnacle for 30 years. Yeah. I mean, there is no bigger name in our business, and in my opinion, there's no better broadcaster. He is, and for those, you know, Canadians who may not be quite familiar, but he is every bit as revered as Bob Cole is in Canada. I mean, he's at the top, and he was a guy who would call me. I mean, I'm just, wow. I'd be like, I can't believe this guy is calling me. I wouldn't call me if I was me, and he's him, and he's calling me. I mean, that's one thing I just wanted to mention, is the great thing about this business is you do run into people who are at the absolute pinnacle. And again, not all of them are great, but you'll find some that are just unbelievable, and he was one.
With the broadcasts this year, COVID has impacted, obviously, what you guys are doing. What are you dealing with right now, COVID-wise, that may have been different last year or 2 years ago?
I mean, everything's different.
Yeah.
But, I it's hard for me to say I'm dealing with it, because, I mean, you know, I just, again, at the risk of going on a soapbox, it's just, I'm glad we're working. I mean, I'm fortunate the league's going. Obviously, we're in a bit of a tenuous situation right now, just kind of waiting to hear what's gonna go on with Montreal. But for the most part, it's gone fairly smoothly. And yeah, it's, you know, I know what you're getting at. It's not easy to call a game off a monitor. I'm probably not doing as good a job as I could if we were in the arena for all the games. Now, I'm in the arena for all the home games. So if I've been brutal in some home games, that's on me. But, you know, the road games, yeah, there's some challenges. But, you know, again, it sounds pretty superficial to complain about the little things. The fact of the matter is, you know, I'm so glad we're back to work. It is a challenge, but it's not to use a word that Dean used earlier. It's not insurmountable. I mean, you can do it. It's not going to be as good. There's things off screen, and you can't really fool the viewer at some point. Not that you like harp on it and use it as a crutch or an excuse, but you have to say, you know, we just simply didn't see it. We're waiting for clarification. I mean, sometimes, you know, believe it or not, flipping a complete 180 from how we started this podcast, sometimes honesty is the best policy. So if you don't see something, you know, better wait and get the information before you comment on it. So
I'm fascinated.
Challenges, but I love working with Louis DeBrus. He's a great guy.
Oh, Louis is awesome.
I'm glad to be calling games again.
I'd love to have Louis on national telecast too, right? You only get to hear Louis if it's an Edmonton game here in Toronto, but I think he's phenomenal too. And I've watched a couple of games too, and I think you're terrific. You've got this, like, you got obviously the energy that you bring to even just this podcast is energy that you bring into the broadcast of games. And I'm fascinated by that, you know, because I don't know who the cat was.
Well, you DM'd me, don't suck. So I figured I better bring something. By the way, I don't think that's the greatest way to start a conversation. You can be on my show, but please don't suck. See, there's some dishonesty. Yeah. There you go.
I appreciate the honesty. Speaking of which, dude, when an old school dude leaves a team that has been there for a long time, was that transition hard for you? Because you know, we talked about it on the radio this morning. I said I was excited to talk to you because I was doing some reading about you and your career, and I went into these Edmonton Oiler chat rooms. Don't do it. Don't ever do it. Anybody. And people have these preferences, right? They go, I like this guy.
As they should. I mean, Rod Phillips was the voice of the Oilers for 38 years. I mean, you're never going to be that guy, and that's one thing I decided early on, like way back when, is don't try to be the guy I certainly am no replacement for Rod Phillips. He's a Hall of Famer. An entire generation of Edmontonians grew up with this guy, and he was a great person. I mean, he's a great guy. I still see him every once in a while. And you know what? He made the transition really smooth for me. He supported me. He reached out and said, hey, call me if you're getting a rough time, or if you have any advice, about how to relate to the players or coaches. I mean, he was kind of open door. I got to work with him 10 games that first year. He did 10 games, and you know, he just has a real pleasing voice. And that's one of the things why, not everyone is going to like the successor. And he's got a beautiful voice. He's got a nicer voice than mine. I mean, he does. But what I decided early on is like, don't try to be him. It's an insult to the viewer. It's an insult to the listener. Just be yourself and hope that as the years go by, your work ethic, your commitment to the game, your love of what you're doing will ultimately translate. And even your fiercest detractors will at least come around to the point where they're like, you know what? The guy loves the game. I'll give him that. And I'm not sure I'm there with some of my fiercest detractors yet. It might take me another 30 years. It might never get to that point. But that's all you can do. You in all honesty, you cannot deceive the listener or the viewer that you're something you're not. You just got to be you. And I love doing the games, and I hope that shows, because especially when it's a tight game coming down the stretch, man, there's nothing like hockey. There isn't. It's great to have a one goal game with something on the line and 2 minutes to play.
What's it like to call and to see Connor McDavid play every single game? Like, well, what's that?
Yeah.
What is that like to watch that all the time as a guy that has immersed himself in the game, seen thousands of players? What is the experience like?
Well, you end up kind of normalizing behavior that you shouldn't. In other words, you almost like accept it as, oh, that's just routine. And I have to be real careful with that. Is you still got to point out how great this guy is. I don't care how, easy he's making it look. It's not easy. There have been times where I've gone back and said, I might have been a little too reserved with that call. Like, what kind of move was that?
I've also heard you and Louie laughing.
Yeah.
Like it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous what he did. And you can hear you two going, what just happened?
Yeah. What you're hearing,
hear that honesty is, too.
Yeah. What you're hearing is incredulity. I'm not even sure that's a word, but
we make up words all the time on this pod. It's good.
Yeah. It's just like that can't have just happened. I mean, it just can't have he can't have made it that look easy, and he can't have made an all-star D-man look that bad. You have a lot of those plays with Connor McDavid. It's a real pleasure, and again, one of the reasons you get jaded this year is an exception, obviously, but you see some moves like that in practice all the time. So you're not only seeing it in games, but you're seeing it in practices. You're seeing him try things that other people wouldn't even dream of. And he's not just trying them. He's executing them, you know, more often than not. So it's a look, this is the elite of the elite. When you're covering games in the National Hockey League, you're watching the greatest athletes of the world. I don't care what anyone says. Mm-hmm. These are athletes who accomplish magnificent things at magnificent levels of speed, and McDavid has just taken it to another level. And I'm sorry, all apologies to all the other great players in the league. I truly believe it's Connor McDavid and everyone else right now. I'll stand by that.
I don't think you're going to get pushback though, Mike Jackson.
Yeah, it's no disrespect to Austin Matthews or Nathan McKinnon. Like, I'm not or Leon Draisaitl for that matter. It's no disrespect. It's just there's a guy right now that's on another level. And I felt the same way when I was a huge NBA fan as I was a kid. You know, and I'm sorry, from 1987 to 98, there wasn't a guy who was ever really that close to Michael Jordan. Mm-hmm. And that's how I feel like we're going to look back on this 12 to 15-year period 10 years from now. We're going to ultimately say, well, the 1 year it was Patrick Kane. No, it was Crosby. No, it was McKinnon. No, it was Matthews. We're going to look back 12 to 15 years right now, and we're like, no, that we were grasping that year. Yeah, that was a reach. No, yeah, he wasn't it. It's one guy.
Sure. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead, Locke.
I was going to ask about the fan situation. I don't know if there is talk amongst you guys in the business, but is it hard to call these games, especially at home with no fans?
Well, I miss the fans tremendously. I mean,
yeah.
Again, it's all relative, like hard, you know, a lot of people have it harder than I do. It's not the same. I mean, I don't feel like I'm manufacturing energy, but I also feel like, you know, there's a level I'm missing that the fans are responsible for. Like, I actually feel like a lot of people say, oh, you brought great energy to the telecast this year. In fact, you did at the start of the podcast. And I'm appreciative of that. But I'm also cognizant of the fact that I'm probably, and I don't even know it, but I'm probably not doing as good of a job as I will next year when their fans are in the building. I'm sorry. The fans, the audience, whatever. It makes you a better broadcaster, makes you a more interesting personality. I don't think if the three of us are sitting around on Dean's back porch, this conversation would be perceived, if it at all is, as interesting as it would be in this forum where we know we've got an audience, we know we've got to project our voice a certain way, we know we have to elucidate certain things and hammer home certain points. If we're on Dean's back porch, we're not doing that. And that's kind of the sharpness that I feel I'm missing that only the fans can bring. And even though I'm not speaking then during the game, of course, I'm not a public address announcer, and nor do I have those skills, but the fans help sharpen me. I'm 100% convinced of that, that I'll never be the broadcaster I am as long as fans are out of the building. I honestly believe that. And that's not – you know, that's not just pandering to fans. That is vibe. Legitimate.
Yeah, it's the vibe. It's what they bring in that moment when you have to call a goal and the place erupts with, you know, real music and real fans, not piped in fan music, right? The experience has to be incredibly different. I have a friend that was down at Maple Leaf Gardens. It's not Maple Leaf Gardens. It's called the Scotiabank Center now. We've been through two name changes in a new building. Good job, Dean. But I had a friend that went down and he watched a game because he was doing some work with a company that was putting stuff on the boards. So he went down and watched. He was masked up and he said, you know, it's the weirdest thing. It's like walking into Canlan Ice Sports, a fourplex with a whole bunch of pads, and and it's just men's league. You don't see anything. You don't hear anything. So it would be that much more difficult if you're calling that game not to feed off that vibe to be able to entertain people. Because, listen, you call games, but you're an entertainer too.
Well, and the other thing is there's no buildup. Like, one of my favorite walks in the entire league is the walk to Vegas's building. Because there's tailgating people outside. There's usually some Edmonton fans. You know, I'm walking to the rink with my, you know, backpack, and they'll and they're, I'm sure, six or seven deep. But that kind of thing, you know, gets you fired up. Like, yeah. You know, you're in Long Island, you know, they'll be, you know, chanting yes, yes, yes before the game, or, you know, just the vibe of Montreal's Bell Center. Any rink where I get to walk to is kind of fun. Vegas is the one that really sticks out, but I enjoy strolling into San Jose. They might only have 30,000 hockey fans, but I'll tell you what, all of them go to the game. They all go to the game in San Jose. I mean, they're all there. you know, it's that kind of energy that I just love, kind of walking into that, maybe a quick stroll around the concourse just to get, you know, the vibe of people. And I, you know, I joke six, seven deep. Well, it's fun to know that people are making this their night, you know, like, hey, I'm having three or four beers and I'm hard charging to the game, you know, and you can imagine how fun it must be for those people. And trust me, there have been some Oilers seasons 5 or 6 years ago where I wish I could have joined them. I mean, you know, game 78.
You mean 5-6 seasons in a row? Playoffs, you know? 5 or 6 seasons in a row. Yeah.
So all that is really what we're missing right now. And again, it's I feel like it's completely legitimate to feel that way. No matter what, you know, it's legitimate to feel that way if you're a player too. I mean, there's some players around the league that I'm sure miss the raw energy and emotion that elevate their own games.
Yeah, they do. To a player, they do. Let's get to the actual business of the game, though. Leafs, Jets, Oilers all tied with 42 points in the North. I call it the red-green division, but you can call it whatever you like. Yeah, it's the red-green division, the Trailer Park Boys division. And this is a month after the Maple Leafs went into Edmonton, spanked that ass, and then walked out, and everybody was going, Jesus, do we just get rid of Connor McDavid? Like, in a month and a half, that team has turned around their fortunes.
No one was saying that. Pump
Dude, you
break.
And I were fucking
no,
talking about
no,
yes,
you
we
were saying it.
I said, when is he going to get sick of it?
Your head up your ass.
That's a lie. I said, when are you going to get sick of it? And you're like, I'm hearing rumors now. And I'm like, oh, that makes sense.
I did not say that. There is no, at no point would I have said that. I just said, wait till we get to see the Leafs.
Yeah,
like fall from grace, which apparently, well, that's happening now.
Yeah, well, it did. But, you know, you got three teams, right? And listen, the North Division's fun. Everybody's having a good time. I'm personally sick of it because it's not a measuring stick against any other division.
I love it.
When you can't play any other teams, and I'm getting sick of seeing the same thing. But, like, is the belief in Edmonton to the point where, hey, listen, we're hanging? You know, and this is the North Division, but crawling out of that hole and the dejection from like a month and a half ago, got to be a different vibe. I mean, what's the difference? What happened?
Well, it didn't last long. First of all, I thought the biggest game of the season might have been the first one after the Toronto series. Calgary came into Edmonton. It was a hard fought game. The Oilers didn't play particularly well, but they found a way to kind of grind it out.
Yeah, they ground out a win. Yeah,
I think they trailed in that game and ended up winning it 3-2. Then Ottawa came in, and, you know, for whatever reason, and people love to make, you know, poke fun at the Sens, but they're basically 500 without the Oilers. It's just been a bad matchup for this year for the Sens. And one of the reasons is they haven't gotten any goaltending whatsoever against Edmonton. I've seen them get goaltending against other teams, but not against Edmonton. They haven't gotten one save that they've needed. Now, that's not taking away anything. The Oilers, all they can do is play the games on their schedule. They've had 7 games against the Senators. They've won them all. No one else in the league can say that. So you can take away that from Edmonton. But, again, you got to win the games that are played. As you said, you're playing the same teams. You might as well beat that team over and over and over again.
Right.
You don't get any points for losing. So the quick response was crucial. And then the other thing I think that happened is – as much as Toronto fans might be unwilling to concede this, is that was a big series for the Leafs too.
Sure. Yeah. Sure.
And the evidence is they swept the Oilers playing near perfect hockey. And then they proceeded to drop 6 of 7. And that's the letdown. That
awful
is
awful to watch. Awful.
And we've seen those letdowns throughout sports history, you know, long as you want to go back. Douglas gets up for Tyson, gets knocked out by Holyfield in his next fight. Right. You know, I mean, it's just one of those situations where, you know, the Leafs were jacked. They played great. And then I think, you know, there's a natural a drop-off. You rose to the occasion. You then go into struggling Vancouver. All of a sudden, you've got 2 losses that you shouldn't have picked up. And now you're fighting to get out of your own tailspin.
Yeah.
Whereas the Oilers got the couple of immediate wins and were able to build their confidence back. And as a result, you've got Edmonton, I think, 7-2 and the Leafs 2-6 since that 3-game series. So they'll settle it for now this weekend. But ultimately, it's not about this weekend. It's about what happens in mid to late May. We all know that.
Yeah, last 10 games, Leafs 4-6-0. Oilers 7-3-0, and Connor McDavid's just been
right.
Ridiculous to watch.
And the first 2 of those 10 were the games 2 and 3 against Edmonton.
Right.
So
right.
Since that sweep, it's 2 teams completely going in a different direction. Of course, obviously the Leafs have a chance to take over sole possession with a win tonight.
Mm-hmm. Fucking
Leon deserves a bit of credit too. I mean, Leon has been outstanding in these last 7 games as well. He's been fantastic. Oh,
I mean. Look, the Oilers, one of the things about the Oilers that I think a lot of people outside of Edmonton don't realize is it isn't just McDavid and Draisaitl. I mean, they've got the league's second highest scoring defenseman, Tyson Barrie. And I would suggest to those who live in Toronto, he didn't play a great 20 games for Mike Babcock.
No.
But not many people did. And once they made the move with Sheldon Keefe, Tyson Barrie was very good in the second half. I think everyone kind of forgot about that and just looked at the whole year and said, he had an off year. Well, he still almost had 40 points in an abbreviated season. He still was a productive player, averaging, you know, half a point a game as a defenseman, more than half a point.
Yeah.
And so, you know, no one should be surprised at the year he's having, but he's had a good year. Darnell Nurse has been terrific. I think he's 3rd in the league in plus minus. He's got 10 goals already. I mean, only Victor Hedman has more than that. I mean, So they've got 2 really good defensemen. And again, a lot of people snickered, and I wasn't sure, you know, whether bringing Mike Smith back was the right move, but the guy just turned 39. He's 11-3, couple more wins. If he wins the 2 this weekend, guess what? There are going to be some people out there who said, you know what? If you're looking at 3 Vezina finalists, maybe he's the 3rd guy. That's how good he's been.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not making this up. The numbers speak for themselves. Now, did I expect it? No. But if you look at Edmonton by the numbers, they've got depth scoring. They've got a couple of defensemen who can really play. And they've got goaltenders who are playing well for them. Since Mike Smith came back, Mikko Koskinen has had a .935 save percentage. Mm-hmm. You don't
he
think
needs help.
That
he
right need, now?
He needs a strong second, right?
And he that, does.
He proved that. I mean, yeah.
Hey. We've still got a lot of hockey to play. I mean, again, 3 weeks ago, Dean's bang on. 3 weeks ago, everyone, including myself, was ready. Okay, you know, that probably cements Toronto's hold on the division. And how wrong we all were.
Yeah, and happy to be wrong because I didn't like the division when it was runaway. You know, even though I was a Toronto fan.
It's gotten tight quick, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. Yeah. And so the games are meaningful. These games that are coming up this weekend, it's must watch, right? If you're not a hockey fan, if you're a surface hockey fan, the Oilers are coming to town. You've got the best player in the universe going up against the best player the Leafs have ever had. And both teams are deadlocked for top spot in the North Division. So, you know, this is kind of what we asked for. Like, yes, it's COVID hockey, and for sure, you know, there are a bunch of shitty things about COVID hockey, but this is what people wanted. And to see Edmonton, you know, it makes my heart happy to see Edmonton not be an embarrassment to the city, right? Because if you remember back before Mike Babcock showed up, and I was doing some sports radio at the time, and the conversations post-game that you would have on the radio the next day, here in the city of Toronto when they were going through their tank season, when they got the year before they got Matthews.
Right.
It was so hard to have a great conversation about a team that is intentionally trying to be garbage, right? Or it's even harder to talk about a team that's not intentionally trying to be garbage, that just can't get it right. And the Oilers have been that team in the NHL with first overall draft picks coming out of their pockets. They were dropping draft picks at one point, going, oh, that's my draft pick. I'll take that draft. And they continually won the draft. And so, you know, it's a good story on top of it. Listen, I'm just excited to see the team play this weekend because, you know, Matthews and McDavid are pals, and they've got this one-upmanship thing that happens every time they play. So there's a game within a game to happen as well this weekend, and I couldn't be more excited.
Yeah, and it's funny. I think each of them has taken from one another. I mean, all of a sudden this year, Connor McDavid is second in the league in shots on goal. I mean, and that's – where do you think that's coming from? I mean, I think 34 has a great deal to do with that. You train with a guy, you see his shot. He's taking more one-timers. He's looking for a shot more. You know, and there's nothing wrong with that. I think sometimes the shoot first mentality is can be a little bit foreign or out of place to hockey. And if you're a good shooter, why not shoot it, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think McDavid has incorporated some elements of Matthews.
For sure he has.
I think to some extent, Matthews has pushed himself. They've both been pushing each other. I'll put it to you this way. I think they're both better two-way players than they've ever been. You don't get many chances against either one of those guys. So you're absolutely right. The game within a game is fun. There was that sequence this year where I think Matthews went for 2 goals and 4 points and McDavid might have followed up with a hat trick and 5 points. So, you know, when you have stuff like that, it's a lot of fun and two elite players at the absolute peak performance.
Trade deadline coming up, Jack. Is there anything you're hearing, like as far as names go?
Not much. Dollar out. That's the thing with, you know, it's great having Oscar Klefbom on LTIR, but there's your cap. Like once you have a guy on LTIR, it's dollar in, dollar out. You've already established your own salary cap. So Klefbom being out for the season allowed the Oilers some flexibility at the very beginning when it came to assembling their roster. But now you've for every one you bring in, you got to move something out. And so there has to be just the right fit there. And I don't think this whole border situation is helpful at all for any Canadian team looking to, you know, add at the deadline, because the quarantine period really is challenging, not just for the 2 weeks, but again, you've got a guy who then hasn't played for 2 weeks. Yeah. And, you know, so it's going to take him another 2 weeks to get up to speed. So any guy you bring in is probably a month out from playing to the potential that you foresee for him when you make the deal. So it's going to be very tough, not just for Edmonton, but for all teams in Canada. But for Edmonton, it's a dollar in, dollar out situation. So keep that in mind when these deals come up. If the Oilers are looking to take on a prorated version of a $5 million contract, well, they're going to have to find $2.5 million to shed.
Yeah, and then they're going to have to be okay with a guy. You know, you watch the Pierre-Luc Dubois saga play out, right, where he doesn't play for a couple of weeks and he gets injured. Took him a month to get into it. You don't have a month after the trade line to get into it. I mean, it's a real problem when it comes to the pandemic.
I don't think the Jets are complaining now, though. Wow.
No. Yeah, they're
starting to play, but, it takes – and as Dean rightfully points out, I don't know how many people are going to be comfortable – to, you know, look at a 3 week to 4 week timeline for that guy fully up to speed on your roster.
Yeah. Really quickly, not really quickly, because you take as much time as you want explaining it. Something happened yesterday I was shocked about in the NHL, like just shocked. The firing of longtime NHL referee Tim Peel. I'm going to play the clip. I know you've heard it, but I'm going to play it for the people watching. He was caught on a hot mic talking about a makeup penalty. Have a listen to this.
Much, but I wanted to get a fucking penalty against Nashville early in the...
So I heard that yesterday and I knew it would be a hot topic, but I kind of, you apply some critical thinking at some point. You go, okay, it's a makeup call. You know, they exist. It happens all the time in the game. As long as I've understood this game, makeup calls have been a way for referees to manage the game if they've screwed up the game or if they've made a bad call, whatever the situation is. We know it has existed. We know it's a massive part of NHL hockey. The verbalization of it, the way he did it with the filth flarn in there and being caught on a hot mic, led to him being dismissed yesterday. The NHL reached a statement. It says National Hockey League Senior Executive Vice President of Hockey Operations Colin Campbell announced referee Tim Peel. Following his comments during the game last night between Detroit Red Wings and the Predators, no longer will be working NHL games now or in the future. Nothing is more important than ensuring the integrity of our game. Tim Peel's conduct is a direct contradiction to the adherence of that cornerstone principle we demand of all of our officials, fans, players, coaches, and all those associated with the game. No justification, blah, blah, blah. Love to get your thoughts because this could be a sea change moment when it comes to officiating in the NHL.
Well, it could. I don't necessarily believe it will be. I think, to be honest with you, and again, this is a guess, decisive action, maybe just kill the story kind of thing, where you go ahead and move on from it. In other words, hey, we've made a decision. It's not an issue. Like we took care of the quote unquote problem. I don't know. You know, this is something where, you know, being up in a press box for an NHL game as opposed to, let's say, courtside for an NBA game, let's take the pandemic out of it. You hear a lot of conversations if you're courtside at an NBA game where, again, the referees and the players and coaches have much the same relationship as they do in the NHL. In other words, it's a constant conversation. Not every foul is called. There's often a warning or a watch it. You know, sometimes I'll hear that with the on-ice mics. You can actually hear them say, hey, wait, hold on. You know, let them go. You'll hear that kind of thing. That's the same, a very similar relationship that the NBA has with its players. The difference is, you know, we're not ringside. We're not covering the team. So the only people who truly hear that are the players and the coaches in terms of the often going on conversation in and out with officials. And so I think to say, well, we don't want any managing of the game anymore is not realistic. I don't think it's realistic. I think very similar to the NBA, some plays develop too quickly and the athletes are too big or too fast or whatever, where you're not going to get everything right. So you're just trying to adjust the temperature of the game at times. You're trying to get most calls right. You're trying to call the rule book as much as you can. But I think both games have evolved to the point where you're not going to see everything. The NFL is another one. I mean, the pass interference, you know, with the Saints and the Rams. I mean, these athletes are not moving at the same rate they did when Johnny Unitas was throwing the football. Or when Jean Beliveau was streaking down the right side. They're at a different pace, and we have more technology. We see more tiny errors or infractions that were missed than we used to. Mm-hmm. And so this is a very challenging issue for me because I'm kind of the thought that sometimes you don't have to articulate everything. And unfortunately, in this situation, that was, you know, it was kind of an example.
Articulated. It was articulated.
It was articulated when it shouldn't have been. Do I think that it, I'm not a ref baiter in my own broadcasting style. I think for the most part, the officials do not decide games. I believe that.
That's worth saying aloud.
Yeah. Now look, game 6, 2002, Sacramento in LA, that was decided by the officials. Lakers got one, and your listeners might have to look that up, but that's one that comes to mind. Even the Saints Rams, I believe we're talking about, would the Rams not have had a chance to come back down the field?
And yes, they would have. Yeah. Yeah, and that was the issue. The issue was when the pass interference called, the fact that it wasn't called, and they had an opportunity to get back, right?
Now,
and
it put that away. I guess the Saints could have milked the clock and kicked the field goal at the gun to win. But even that is, you know, you still got to make it. I mean, yeah. I don't know. I mean, there's all these suppositions.
But listen, Jack, from a player's standpoint, you know, I heard Matt Duchene talk about, and I liked what he said. I know game management has been part of the officials universe in the NHL for a long time. But what Matt Duchene said is, I would really like it if games were called based on the merit of the actual game. Not, you know, a ref deciding that, hey, listen, I pooched a call earlier. I got to give a call to the other team early in the second period or the third. Let's
go on. Well, that's one issue. That's one issue, Dean. And I agree with that. But when he says, well, I'd rather not have them manage the game, that's where I think we're right back into a gray area. I mean, I'm sorry. Like, until
you think
the
there are players
for good, Major League Baseball is not going to be 100% right on balls and strikes. They're
no,
not.
I know that, but don't you think in this day and age where, you know, we're so obsessed with fair or unfair and there's so much on the line. Talk about that San Jose game a couple of years ago where I can't remember. Vegas
got jobbed. Got hurt. Mark
right in
Stone
the face.
Got the same misconduct.
Lost all kinds of teeth. No penalty was called. Changed the course of the game and the insertion.
It did. Now, some would say you can't give up three on the power play. I mean,
it's true.
Now, again, I would agree with you. I'm agreeing with you. Vegas, that changed everything. And there have been calls, you know, Mike Renfro in the 79 AFC Championship against the Steelers. Got both feet in. Now it ties the game. But the Steelers won 27-13. So are we to automatically assume they wouldn't have won 27-17? They were better than the Oilers back then. I'm showing my age.
No, it's okay. I love the examples because we're talking about refereeing on the merits of the actual game. We're talking about making calls that need to be made, not inventing calls because you missed one or you gave one that you shouldn't.
You can't invent a call. If you miss a call, you have to.
Was that penalty on Arvidsson not an invention, though?
Well, that's what I mean. So if he feels he missed a call, and then he's calling one on Arvidsson to make it up, then I would suggest, and I'm not saying he did that, but it sounds the mic certainly would suggest that he did.
He said it was weak.
Yeah,
he said it was weak.
You're saying
so what I would say, but even in that language, it was weak. Well, it was weak, but it wasn't a call. I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, a ball can be a borderline strike, but was it a strike? There wasn't much there on pass interference, but was there some interference?
Yeah.
Like, even saying it's a weak call, was there an infraction?
I mean, what's bothering me?
We'll never know, dude. Like, that's the thing, is it? We're not going to know because of what he said.
Exactly. So I guess I don't have the video of the actual call. I mean, is there an argument when you look at the video to make a call for a trip there? I don't know. I mean, I haven't seen that piece of video. I've only seen the Peel video, you know, or if you invent a call, that's one thing. If you make a weak call and you're making it because you're making up for something, then I have a problem with it. Mm-hmm. But if it's a weak call and you decide later you don't like the call, but there was still enough evidence for there a call to be made, then it becomes a borderline call, not really a weak call. Mm-hmm. And even if it is a weak call, if it's an infraction, then it's an infraction. And that's the slippery slope you go down if you're Matt Duchene and want to call everything. Well, if you want to call everything, especially in a Connor McDavid game, then be prepared for 12 power plays. Be prepared for 15 power plays. Because that's how many you could call, theoretically, in most NHL games.
Great point.
For that matter, you go right to the NBA. You could foul out most guys every night if you wanted to.
Yeah.
If you wanted to. You could. I mean, so that's the thing with ball. There is a certain element of subjectivity in these games that unless you go the baseball route, and I believe it's AAA or maybe one of the independent leagues where it's a robot saying ball, then I don't know where we're at. And I certainly don't know how you get robots in NHL officials' ears on calls that you're trying to detect a hook on the hands, unless you put sensors in every guy's equipment, in every piece of equipment they have.
Or you put robots on the ice as referees.
So it's, I'm sorry I'm not probably answering your question.
No, you know what you did is you've actually brought me from the side of, everything based on merit to, okay, there has to be a little subjectivity.
Of course there does.
Humanity in the game, right?
Yes. And now we're right back to where we've always been. All right, well, where is that? And is a call a minute into the game in December the same as a call in the final minute of a game in June? Are you prepared to have that exact same standard? And if you're not, then we're right back to the same conversation, in my opinion.
The thing that I think needs to be discussed is the hypocrisy of the conversation from the league to the fans, and what is clearly probably different from the league to the referees and managing the game. Because I think it's entertaining that the league has to be so sanctimonious with respect to how they're handling it in front of everybody because of the betting side of things. And then behind the scenes, they're just let's just wait a couple of weeks. This will all boil over, and then we can go back to doing it the way we've always done it.
Well, that's every league. I don't single out the NHL for that. I think that's every league. Protect the shield in the NFL. The NBA got all, high and mighty about Tim Donaghy, and then it turned out he was involved in gambling. He was. I don't know the exact details, so I don't want to get too much into it.
I've interviewed Tim Donaghy, and I can tell you he admitted not just to being guilty, but the fact that all kinds of referees do that in the NBA.
There you go. I mean, when that happened, when the NBA got its backup. Oh no, we call it the same no matter whether it's the Lakers in Los Angeles and the Kings in Sacramento. And I had to be honest. At that time, I said, will you just repeat that sentence back? And you're telling me the Sacramento Kings and the LA Lakers are the same thing in your eyes? Come on. No chance. Shaq and Kobe are the same as Peja Stojakovic and Vlade Divac? Okay, sure. You want to sell me something else?
Thank you. You missed Hedo Turkoglu in there as well.
Yeah, Hedo Turkoglu, I still remember Peja airballing a wide-open three that would have won the series in Game 7. And that's where I go back to, the Kings had a home game in Game 7, and you can't close it out. So, again, I don't think the officials oftentimes decide games. I certainly wouldn't want their job. They're almost never praised. The best thing you can ever say about them is you didn't notice them. And this is an unfortunate mic catch. I think it is reflective of a lot of conversations, not a lot of conversations, but the occasional conversation that goes in to working 1,200 games in the league is each game is treated on its own merit, but that doesn't mean it's treated by the same standard. There's a difference. And I'm all for calling a game of its own merit. I'm not for inventing calls, but I do feel like certain games are going to be naturally officiated different than others. I don't think
absolutely
apply the
absolutely
same standard to every single game. No chance.
And if you just let things go, how many bench clearing brawls would there be? Right? If you let the Edmonton Oilers, if you call every penalty on Connor McDavid, you're going to have, it's going to be 12-1. And then the last 10 minutes of the third period is going to be like a bloodbath, right? You got to manage that.
Yeah, but some of us want to see that. I was listening to Jack go off about 15 power plays in a game. I'm like, I could handle that. That's a lot of goal scoring, right? Obviously they're trying to protect that game, but
if you can, then call it that way.
Yeah.
That would be my response is I'm not saying it's necessarily bad. I'm just saying you need to say it out loud and then come to grips with, okay, I'm cool with that. Mm-hmm. And that's what I mean by saying, hey, first minute of a game in December, as opposed to last minute of a game in June.
Absolutely.
If we want the standard to be exactly the same, then I don't want to hear any complaining in the last minute of game seven in June.
It's a great point. Last question. Do you think Tim Peel would have been fired if he had just said friggin' instead of the F word?
Oh, yeah. I don't think it had anything to do with the content.
Part of me
thinks joke? It might have been a joke by you. Sorry.
No, I'm telling.
Of your legitimate questions and your sarcastic ones are starting to get all jumbled. So
I think the swearing had a lot to do with it, and the fact that he's retiring at the end of the year.
I disagree with you there. I don't think the swearing had anything to do with it.
Oh. I think 10 years ago they would have slapped him on the wrist, kept him off the ice for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and he'd be back officiating games in the playoffs.
I think it was the content of the message and not the NC-17 content. I think it was just the general content was not a good look. The one thing I will say is I don't like invented calls either. Instead of invented calls, I'd rather you go non-call, non-call. I don't want you to miss a call and then call one, you know, for the sake of just they should have had a power play, so I'm gonna get them one here.
Right.
I'd rather you have another non-call than again injecting yourself into the game. But ultimately, the perfect scenario is you make the calls you see, and you have the same standard throughout the game. Most of the time, coaches and players will live with that. If the same standard applies to both clubs, whether you're calling everything or you're calling nothing. Now, most would appreciate calling nothing. There was a game that Edmonton played against Winnipeg a few weeks ago at Rogers Place, and Edmonton won it. I think it was 3-2, where both teams were unhappy because there were too many penalties. I think there were 11 power plays combined. I think if you ask most players and coaches, they'd tell you, I'd rather them err on the side of let them play than I'm calling everything.
It slows it down, slows the game down. Right?
Well,
I think
ultimately the age-old adage of 5-on-5, let them decide it 5-on-5. But yeah. I agree with Dean. If there's 7 power plays in a game that are earned, then there should be 7 power plays in a game.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to see it. Just like I'd like to see, like, I know there's a lot of people that are upset because they don't want, men competing in women's sports and women competing in men's sports. Like a lot of people don't want to see their athletes go to the Olympics and get busted for steroids. I want to throw a ton of crap against the wall and see what sticks. I think there should be the steroid Olympics. I think referees should be allowed to make the game.
There already was. Phil Hartman pulled his arms off. Look it up.
Is that on Saturday Night Live?
Arms off. Look it up. If you haven't seen it, look it up. You will not regret it.
Was he not one of the funniest human beings on the face of the earth? I miss Phil
Saturday
Hartman.
Saturday Night Live, I think it was in 88, the old drug Olympics. And he had some sort of fish paralyzer, and he was a weightlifter out of Russia, and he pulled his arms off.
Yeah. One of the greats. Jack Michaels, voice of I almost said the Toronto Blue Jays just because I'm spacing out. The voice of the Edmonton Oilers. Where can we find you on Twitter, Jack?
At Edmonton Jack.
That's it?
That's it.
Repping the city in his Twitter handle. At Edmonton Jack.
Very creative when I got to town. Our social media person asked, well, what do you want for a Twitter handle? And I couldn't think of anything. And she said, Edmonton Jack is available. I said, sold. Done.
Yeah, Edmonton
Jack. Favorite movie? Jack, what's your favorite movie?
Of all time?
Yeah.
Midnight Run.
Oh, I was going to say, if it was a comedy, I was hoping you'd slip in another reference on a broadcast. The Tommy Boy reference last week made me laugh out loud.
Have you seen Midnight Run?
I have, yes. Yeah, it's heavy.
Heavy?
Oh, Midnight Run.
That's a great action comedy, buddy comedy, lady. That movie, if you watch it again.
Oh, you know what? I'm Radio thinking Guy Midnight lied. Express. I'm thinking Radi- Midnight Express.
Oh, Radi- Radio on. Guy Lied. Amazing.
Midnight Express. Midnight Run, Charles Grodin, Robert De Niro, Dennis Farina, I believe, is in that movie. It is an all-timer. There, I can't pronounce his name, but it's a very early appearance by Joe Pantoliano, the guy who was later in every other movie.
Joe Pantaleone. He was in Sopranos. He was in The Matrix.
He was Ralphie on Sopranos. Mm-hmm. That movie, watch it again. Yaphet Kotto just died, by the way. Yaphet Kotto's in that movie, too. Watch that movie again and tell me I'm wrong.
I'm on it. I'll watch that this weekend. Midnight Run.
Watch it again. I will. If you've seen it two or three times.
I will.
And we'll listen for a reference during the games.
Yeah, please. We're going to do a little game. Every week we'd like you to drop in a reference to a movie.
That movie has the unofficial record of most knockouts due to one punch. I mean, literally. It's
he just goes down.
It is. I'm telling you what. You watch that movie. Please get all your listeners to watch that movie. It is a forgotten movie, but is a true Hollywood treasure.
Really triggered him there, Locke, with that question about movies.
Yeah. Well, I figure you guys have kept me on for an hour and 20 minutes already, so I might as well just blather on some more.
Once again, a lie from a radio guy, hour 15.
Yeah, not an hour 20. I think we started chatting originally at least 105. I expect copious amounts of Toronto area gift cards upon my return to the area.
Well, listen, I look forward to when the pandemic is done and you're back in town and you're calling games across the country.
You're not going to say hello. Stop,
dude. This. I'm going to come down to this. I'm going to come down and see you. That's a lie. I'm going to have you on the show in a week and a half.
Right,
Michaels. Michaels. And
my last name. There's only a Jack in the lower left corner. My last name isn't on there. And it's because you were typing it in and forgot it.
No, I know it's Michaels. And here's the thing. I wouldn't bring this up with anybody, but now you're giving it to me. I question as to whether or not that's your actual real last name.
A lot of people do. And you're right to ask me because it does sound completely made up.
Yeah.
But I swear to you, it's not John Michaels. It's not Jack, you know, whatever. Roslovich.
Your last name isn't Buttersworth. It's actually.
Yeah, it's very strange. I have a made for TV name. Jack Michaels. It is my given name. My middle name is Martin. It is. But I have. I've been questioned on numerous times. You're not the first. I'm sure you won't be.
Is that your radio name? How many people say that's your radio name? Radio names were the worst. My first radio name was James Dean.
Jesus.
Yeah, and they wouldn't let me go on the air with my actual name in Fort McMurray, but somehow in Toronto for 20 years they let me do it.
What's wrong with Dean Blundell?
Yeah.
You sound like a switch-hitting third baseman in the 1960s.
Light hitting. By the way. Light-hitting utility infielder in the 60s.
I win this battle. I was LJ the DJ at the beginning of my career.
That's the worst.
That's awful.
That's tough.
That's a tough handle.
Yeah. At Edmonton Jack on Twitter, Jack Michaels, voice of the Oilers. Really appreciate you being here.
Thank you, Jack.
Good luck this weekend. I'm going to hit you up on Twitter. I think I just followed you, so I'm going to hit you up on Twitter so we can trade barbs over the weekend.
All right. I'll believe it when I see it.
Watch Midnight Run.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. We will. Thanks, Jack. Jack Michaels, voice of the Edmonton Oilers, ladies and gentlemen. That was funny, Locke.
I like him. He's got a lot of energy, and he's brought a lot of energy to the broadcasts. We're very lucky to have him, especially when the odd time you get to watch the Flames broadcast, and you go, thank God we're in Edmonton, and I'm not a Flames fan, and I have to watch that train wreck.
What's the difference between Jack Michaels and, well, I have, but I haven't watched a single Flames broadcast. Like I still think that Broadbent guy does the shows or whatever.
I'm talking about the overall, like all the personalities. We touched on this yesterday. Louis is unbelievable.
Louis is incredible. And Jack's energy is undeniable, right? Like if you're listening to a guy call a hockey game, go and listen to Chris Cuthbert versus Jim Houston, if you're going to watch national games. Chris Cuthbert has this this vibe that carries you through and makes you want to keep watching and go, this is exciting. He's making me feel excited. If you watch Jim Houston, you get none of that unless he's calling a Vancouver Canucks game because he clearly loves the Canucks. And it's really easy to shit on play-by-play guys. Like, it's super easy. But that is a fucking tough job. So don't you start crapping on other people that are doing that gig. in other cities. It's a hard job. I went.
Okay,
and spent
I'm not
an,
even
an
necessarily
evening.
Talking about the play-by-play guy from Calgary. I'm talking about the entire broadcast as a whole. It's painful to watch, and I'm not wrong.
Well, you don't watch those games. You don't watch.
I do. Flames I do games. Watch. I watch the Oilers and the Flames games. When
yeah, but you're not going to watch the Flames feed when you're watching an Oilers Flames game. You're going to watch a Jack feed.
Well, yes. But I mean, I'm too lazy sometimes. And speaking of 4, 5, 6 deep, I'm not switching over to anything. I got it on the TV. Right. So then you're dealing with, the broadcast crew that's down there. And again, we touched on this yesterday. I think it's a product of these cell phone companies owning everything and firing 15% of their staff every year. And then rehiring people that'll work for half or a quarter of the money that they were paying the guy before. Yeah. So anyway, Edmonton's got a great broadcast crew. Yeah. Great guy.
Yeah, they do. They do. Jack Michaels, appreciate him coming on the show today. Thanks, Locke. At Lachlan Cross, Cruise 95.7 Cruise FM in Edmonton. I'm going to keep talking to your boss on Twitter. Just make sure you're good.
Please don't.
Does that bother you that he tweeted me?
No, it doesn't bother me at all. No. I think the ongoing conversation with my boss is probably not good.
I'm not gonna make that an ongoing conversation. I'm just gonna keep talking to him about other things.
And I'm sure you will not shit talk me at all.
So Locke looks like he's tired. I'm a few years younger. Do you want me to come into the city and help you out? That's what I'll say to him. Locke looks exhausted.
He is. I'm up at 3:30 every morning.
You gotta be. I appreciate you being here.
It's fun. No, I enjoy this. I wouldn't miss this for the world. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you might not if you keep it up. Back it off, dude. Back it off. Do I have to give you tips on how to stay in line in radio, how to keep it together?
I don't know if I should be
for me
taking tips from Dean Blundell on how to hold on to my job.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't do it.
I'll tell you what Dean told me to do in this situation.
Dean told me that you're supposed to go fuck yourself. I'm not sure.
I wrote it down and I'm going to read it word for word.
Dean told me you're my boss because you can't do the job that I'm doing. That's what Dean told me to say to you.
You should write a handbook.
All the things I've said to program directors, like bosses, I've had them fired.
Dean,
all the
you
things,
and I should. We should write a book.
We should. Of all the things that I've said to my boss, I think the greatest thing I've ever said to my boss, who just came back from getting his hair done. He had his hair dyed. Got some nice light microdermabrasions, some new teeth. He was gone for like 3 weeks to get a bunch of work done.
Are we talking about the Weird Al here? Canada's
no.
Weird Al?
No.
Oh.
Different guy.
Oh, Dave.
Dave, guy that fired me. And he comes in and he looks completely different. Like his hair is like completely different color. He's got brand new chiclets. His face is like this. I didn't know whether to say hi to him or play his face in Louie Louie or Wipeout. And he says, or no, he said something. I can't remember what happened, but there was a problem. And my way of managing it was asking him if he was trying out for the Benjamin Buttons 2 role. And it was gone like 3 weeks later, Locke. Much to my surprise.
Surprise.
You're not trying out to be Benjamin Buttons 2, are you?
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks for doing this, dude.
That was awesome. I'm glad Jack agreed to do that. I knew he would be highly entertaining. And we didn't get too sports donkey-ish. I mean, it was obvious. I mean, we didn't get deep, right? We could have gotten a lot deeper. We got a good chat out of a legend in the broadcast industry, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, we did. And I love his story too, right? Like, because there's some stick-to-itiveness there that a lot of people fucking give up before they make it. And he made it. You know, he's calling games on television in the NHL for an NHL team. That's what play-by-play guys that are in the game love to do. It doesn't matter if you're in Windsor calling game for the Spits or if you're in Toledo calling game for the Jackfish. It doesn't matter. What your goal is to do what he did. And to hear him talk the way he talked about, listen, don't give up. Mm-hmm. Don't think too much of yourself and pour yourself into what you're doing, no matter where you are.
His honesty exactly was refreshing as well.
Yeah.
Like, and that comes out in his broadcasts. I mean, you can hear his honesty in his call. Like, he's just a good guy. He sounds like a guy you want to have a beer with. Him and Louis are a great match too. I mean, they complement each other beautifully. Mm-hmm. And Louis is really, really gotten a lot better. He was always a decent guy, a color guy, but in the last couple of years, man, I'm so impressed with what he's bringing to the table. Yeah, mm-hmm. They're great. They're a fantastic team.
Appreciate you doing this, Locke. Thanks, buddy.
Thank you, my friend. I'm going to let you go.
Okay, we'll talk to you soon. Lachlan Cross, 95.7 Cruise FM in Edmonton. These podcasts are getting longer, and I have to pee. Like, the older I get, the more it's like, you got to pee right now, dude. So I'm uncomfortable. Anyway, you don't need to know that. Thanks to our friend Jack for coming on, Jack Michaels. You can get him at Edmonton Jack on Twitter. Oilers Leafs this weekend. Looking forward to that. Lachlan appearing courtesy of his boss, Christian, who let him on the show today. Thanks, buddy. You're a really good dude. Really appreciate you doing that. Great guy. If you listen to the radio in Edmonton, you know who Locke is, 95.7 Cruise FM. Host of the morning show, The Locker Room. Thanks to everybody for watching. Thanks for being here. Really appreciate it. Don't forget, you can get us at deanblundell.com. You can sign up for our newsletter there as well and pick and choose what you want to get from any one of 30-plus podcasts at deanblundell.com. We just added a new true crime one, too. It's actually really good. Really, really good. We'll talk about that more next week because I think we're done with podcasts this week. Either way, go to deanblundell.com for all that information. Thanks to our friends at Ed's Fine Imports, his Gitch premium luxury underwear, no piling, perfect fit, pouch in the front. It's like a hammock for your nutsack and your fellas. Get them now by going to edsfineimports.com and using promo code Gitch, then the number 3, G-I-T-C-H, then the number 3. He'll send you 4 pairs of Gitch for the price of 3. All kinds of colors to choose from. The most comfortable men's underpants you'll ever wear at edsfineimports.com. Gitch is the name of his underwear. Gitch3 is your promo code. Domination.com, dominate with content. DMNTN.com, do it today. You want to produce content like we do. Promos, commercials, videos, you can do it all with domination.com. Try it for free. Go to DMNTN.com today. Blue Microphones and all of our friends at Blue Microphones. Blue is the official partner sponsor of deanblundell.com, part of the Blue Crew. Go to bluemicrophones.com for more information on what you can use to make every single thing you're doing on this digital world, in this new space that we live in, sound and look a whole lot better. They got microphones, they've got headphones, they've got everything that you need. If you're gaming, you're podcasting, you're working, at Blue Microphones on Twitter or bluemic.com for more information. And Black Rose Organics. Big show tomorrow with the guys from Black Rose Organics. Got a couple of announcements to make. Better cannabis at a better price. It's your medicine. And they want to make sure that they love that plant. They give you what they need from that plant. And you get what you need from that plant as well. Black Rose Organics. Look them up today. If you got a medical license, they'll help you out with that. In a big, bad way. In a great way. Strains are incredible. Black Rose Organics. More information, more on the show. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for hanging out with us. We appreciate it. And stay safe, be kind to each other, and we'll see you in a couple of days. Bye.
Is also blind as a fucking bat, so you're in the shower without your glasses on, you can't see shit, and you're like just going and away you go. He